Make yourselves comfortable.
That's right. Pull up a chair.
Oh, pull up. I must.
What's going on, sports fans, and welcome back to another episode of Insights from the Locker Room. I am your host, Derek Bone Crusher Dennis, back in the building, baby. I hope you guys got a chance to listen to the previous three episodes and you enjoyed the interviews with Charleston Hughes, interview with Alex Singleton, and the third episode was something that was near and dear to my heart, just talking about my personal life experiences with dealing with racism in sports and how racism and sports intertwine, how they're connected, and you know, the impact that it's had on me, the impacts that I've seen it's had on other people. And yeah, you know, the people who've listened to the episode, I've got great feedback from it. People, some people loved it. Some people enjoyed some of the things they heard. Some people got some great insight from it or some great knowledge from it. And that was the objective of the episode. So if you haven't listened to it, go back, listen to episode 3, Racism in Sports, and also listen to episode 1 and 2. Cause we're gonna, you know, we talk football and stuff like that. But without further ado, let's get into this episode. I got a great one for you here today. Got a chance to talk to my young boy, my little brother, Leon Johnson, who's currently an offensive lineman for the Calgary Stampeders in the CFL, but he has some experience in the NFL and the AAF as well. We kind of talked about that a little bit, but I wanted to get Leon on here this week because he's been doing some wonderful things on his social media feeds in terms of talking about the social climate of the world right now, what's going on after the untimely death of George Floyd. That kind of set off, you know, this cycle of what we're seeing lately in America with, you know, peaceful protests and so on and so forth, and the fight for social justice and equality that African American people have been fighting for forever in our lives here in the States. So, yeah, I wanted Leon to come on here and just kind of state his piece, give him another platform for him to get his voice heard. Leon is also an aspiring hip hop artist, a rapper, MC, you know, whatever you want to call it. He's very good, man. He's an intelligent kid, man. He does a great job of getting his message put into his music and relaying it so that people understand it, can kind of feel the pain that comes through the bar. So I want him to come on here and, you know, give you some of that, and also just, you know, talk about his feelings about everything and his experiences growing up as a young black kid in America, and what he feels like could be done to help progress our people, or, you know, to help change our circumstances. So without further ado, we're going to get into this episode with my boy Leon. Hope you guys enjoy.
Mama, there goes that man.
Joining me now, I have my boy Leon Johnson, Temple University graduate, current Calgary Stampeder offensive lineman, former NFL lineman, played with the Denver Broncos. Leon, what's going on, my boy? How you doing?
Everything is good, man. I can't complain.
So what's talk to the people, man. Tell them, you know, where you at right now, what you're getting into, what's life looking like for you right now at the current moment.
Well, right now I'm in parts unknown, you know, doing my thing. I'm in grind mode still, you know. It's uncertainty with the season, but I'm staying ready.
Knowing all uncertainty right now, especially with sports and stuff, you know, it's always been like a hot topic going on right now. Just you know, what are you doing right now to kind of, you know, keep yourself kind of in that mindset to get ready to play football?
Well, I understand, like, around the uncertainty is because of lack of information, just about this whole situation being new, you know. So I'm playing it as if I would play it any other situation, you know. If it's the middle of the off season, I'm getting ready for the season. You know, my mindset is get ready for the season. Whenever it is, whether it comes or not, if it don't, I'll still be ready. But if it does, I'll be ready, you know. So that my mindset is just staying mentally prepared to get ready to play football.
How challenging is it right now to kind of keep yourself – with so much unknown going on right now with COVID-19?
It's a lot more difficult than normal because the lack of resources, the lack of availability to the resources that are available. But it's more or less just, you know, not really the motivation. It's just doing the things that you would do if you were in season, you know, right, and being as close to that as possible. You see a lot of guys are getting hurt. A lot of these kind of these overuse injuries, and it's just a kind of telltale sign of just the lack of resources we have right now.
Right.
I know, especially playing in the CFL and having already such a long offseason with this original 6 months. For it to be extended another three, it's, as a pro athlete, man, you got to try to figure out, you know, not to overwork yourself, but keep yourself prepared in order to play football, because it's a strenuous sport, probably right. More strenuous than other sports.
It's no real, like, you can get in shape, but you can't get in football shape without playing football, I believe. You feel me? I feel like wearing a helmet, wearing the shoulder pads, that's how you get in football shape, you know? So it really just comes to playing the sport.
Oh, yeah. Because you definitely, I know as a vet, I don't know what the younger generation called it. We used to always call it camp legs, man, when it's the first couple of days of camp. And even though you've been working out crazy fever pitch, it's like when you get to hitting other people and having to push and strain and your legs go get noodle like after two, three practices. So we used to call it camp legs, but you're absolutely right, man. Football is one of those sports where you can't be in football shape unless you're actually playing the game. So,
facts.
I know you weren't a football player your whole life. Growing up,
I played baseball, basketball, football, splashed a little soccer in. Splashed some track and field in there, but mainly I was playing basketball and football. Football, maybe ninth grade I started, freshman year.
And in high school, what would you say was like your go-to sport? Because I know for me, when I was in high school, I swore up and down as a basketball player. I didn't start playing football my senior year. So, I mean, I still to this day, if you ask me what's my sport, I'm always going to tell you basketball. So, is football like the sport that you kind of latched onto where you knew, like, all right, I'm good at this sport, or I'm a big dude, I'm agile because, you know, I'm good at the sport I grew up playing with most of. You're from the Northeast, so I know basketball was in your blood.
Absolutely. If I had to answer, I'd say it was basketball. That's what I thought it was, even up until.
That's what it always right, is. So.
Yeah, and that's kind of how Rule recruited. Like, a lot of our linemen, like me, Samaje, Jalen, like, a lot of us played basketball. Like, he came, like, most of the schools, big schools, Florida, Ohio State, all the teams, they came to my basketball games. You feel me? And I looked at that two ways. I knew that they were there for football, but I swore they were there for basketball. So it was like, my first love is basketball, man. I mean, football really opened doors to life that probably never would have been opened. Basketball always been my first love.
I always knew that, especially big linemen, guys who I always knew were kind of real athletic, had great feet, hands, kind of, you know, that's what I always equated myself to, that type of player. I always knew those guys always came from some type of basketball background.
Right, like or something. The natural quick feet, yeah.
So especially you, I know you're from Jersey. I'm from New York. You know what I'm saying? We're not too far apart. Mm-hmm. So I know the coaches and the lifestyle growing up is pretty similar. So talk about your recruitment thing. How did you end up at Temple? Like, what school did you have recruiting you, and what made you want to go to Temple University?
So honestly, all of my scholarships came late, and it's kind of a long story. So bear with me. So I went to a charter school for 2 years, my 10th and 11th grade year. And it was a brand new charter school, and they didn't have the forms that showed the curriculum being qualified through the NCAA clearinghouse. So it almost looked as if for 2 years I didn't go to school. So a lot of the teams, the bigger schools, were more reluctant to really push recruiting me because the uncertainty of whether or not I would even make it through the clearinghouse, because they had to get the curriculum clear first and then add up what my GPA would be in terms of getting me qualified. So after that process had been done, and Temple was the only school. Alan Mowbridge was my recruiting coach. He came 2 and 3 times a week to my old school, and I hadn't even been going there. This is my senior year. I'm in Baumberg now. So he's going back to my old school, making sure that they're doing the diligent process that they need to do to get me right. So that level of dedication that they showed, that no other school showed, I'm talking to Michigan State, Ohio State, the Florida's, Old Dominion's, no other team showed this type of effort to make sure that I got qualified. And I took that personally to heart in a good way, you know, and that influenced my decision.
When you got to Temple, what was your – did you know anything about the city of Philly? Did you know anything about Temple before you got there, aside from, you know, you taking your visit?
Honestly, when I look back, my very first letter when I was in ninth grade was from Temple. It was like a camp letter or something like that, something simple, or – please apply to something like that. So my very first envelope that I ever picked up was from Temple. I had no idea where it was. I knew about Philly. I didn't really know it was even in Philly. I had never been, but I had knew nothing about Temple prior to getting on campus, honestly.
I know for me, I'm from New York City, so my first impression was like it kind of felt like being back home for me. So
it felt like a bigger version of home, like because like yeah. you think of like Newark, Jersey City, that's really what Philly looks like, and that's what right. it feel like. And the campus is so close to the local like residents. Everything's like right. you cross the street from J&H and you at somebody's house, you know. So right. it was a transition. I realized I'm in somebody else's quote unquote hood, as we would say.
Right.
And I we heard the stories from guys that had been there before, guys who was our host on visits. So they told us about how it gets and stuff like that. So, you know, I was prepared for it, but I had also kind of lived through it anyway. So it was just being in a different city, honestly.
So what about, listen, because I got to ask, because I'm a Temple alum too. I mean, for people who don't know, people who listen to the show know I'm a Temple alum. So we're gonna do a little Temple talk, because you are more of a newer generation than me, because you mm-hmm. were Temple like at least 5 years, 5-6 years after I graduated already.
Right, yeah.
So what about Temple that, you know, what about your experience at Temple that you enjoyed, like that you remembered, you finally looked back on?
I remember the camaraderie, like, guys that you didn't really talk to, guys you didn't have class with, you kind of felt the same way about those guys as the dudes that you hung out with every day. And, you know, that's a testament to the culture that we kind of breed it. It was all about each other, you know. We knew we were going to be as good as we all agreed on being. No one guy, like, you know how it is. We not the super talented team. We the guys who go get it the tough way. Discipline kind of helped us out. And the only way to really build that discipline is to trust the guys and care about the guys around you. So that the camaraderie to me was the thing that kind of lasts with me forever. Cause I mean, this guys who, I mean, I remember everybody's first and last name from every team that we played on, you know, so right. camaraderie is something that, and it's special. That's special. Cause when guys retire, they have great careers. I mean, leading this, leading that, they'll tell you the favorite part about it was the locker room. And that's the truth.
Right. So what would you ascribe now that you're a pro athlete, in the sense that you've been in different locker rooms outside of the ones that, you know, aside from high school,
mm-hmm.
college, what do you feel like is the difference between a pro locker room and a locker room in college?
The motivations are different. Everybody's motivated to be great, but everyone might have a different reason why they want to be great. Some guys might want to be great because the money looks good or their family heritage or whatever the case may be. So a lot of guys' motivation is different. A lot of guys, more guys have motivation than in college. You know, a lot of guys who just show up. The guys that know they got scholarships, they know they got class and school and everything's paid for, so they just show up. But it's not really a lot of, and you see them. They stand out in the league more, but it's not a lot of just show up guys, you know.
Yeah.
But that camaraderie that I talked about just manifests in a different version. It's not as intimate, not as close as it is in college, but the good teams, the great franchise, the great dynasties, they do have some aspect of that camaraderie.
After your 4 years of college and playing ball, and you had to redshirt your first year, at what part during your college career did you realize, like, yo, football is something that I could do professionally? And is it like when you started playing football, did you ever think about being a pro football player?
2015, after we went 6-6, we got snubbed out that bowl game after we beat Tulane in the last game. I had played 50% of the games. We had won 50% of the games. They had went through rule, had went through the stats after the season to show how, like, we did everything just about half the time. And that kind of resonated with me because we's kind of, you know, when we didn't get that bowl shot, it was like the Kenny Harpers and the JCs, the Jalen Fitzpatricks, those right. dudes didn't get a chance to go out the way they wanted. They were supposed to.
Right.
You know, we worked hard for that. And I just was like, yo, if I gave half effort and got half result, what if I just say fuck it and give it all, you know? And eventually, you know, that next season, I ended up starting every game. We made it to the inaugural conference championship game, and, you know, I feel like I played a pivotal part in that. So, yeah, that 2014 really changed. It changed my life entirely. Like, I became a better student. That following year, I was on the academics dean's list. Everything. I just became a better person, you know. And I completely turned my life around 2014. And it was,
right.
You know, Weez had a lot to do with that.
Most of your college career, you played left tackle. But at one point, you know, you had Deion Dawkins, who now is, you know, starting left tackle for the Buffalo Bills. I think that his last season or two seasons he was there, he had to, you had to play right tackle opposite him. But what was that transition going from left to right like? Like, a lot of people don't understand, as a lineman, they don't understand like that transition of being able to flip sides and play, you know, different directions, how big of a effect that can have on a lineman's game. So for you, kind of just detail like what that, being, having that versatility to be able to switch sides and be able to adjust to being a versatile lineman.
So from a mental aspect of it, during Deion's senior year, I was preparing to play left. I had known that that was going to be my role, and I wanted that role. I wanted to be like Deion. We knew Deion was going to get drafted high. We knew, you know, we knew he was a pro player the moment we saw him. And he was always really my, like, motivation, the guy I looked up to. So his senior year, mentally, I was preparing to play left. Physically, I had the hip injury on my left side, and I was struggling on the right side because, you know, the left side, inside is your base. The power, everything is, that's your kickstand, basically. And so with that being my injured side, when I moved over, I was kind of like, I was happy to get that weight off. Now I can play a little better. But senior year, some sprained ankles and some things. Unfortunate that I got a car accident right after my surgery. And, you know, it was just unfortunate. But the transition from going to right to left is definitely something more than just mental. It's a physical thing. If you don't have most guys don't have the same balance on each side, you know. It's versatility, honestly, is the key to really having longevity. The more you could do, the more you will do. So
you go through your college career, you finish your senior season. You guys did pretty good your senior year of college, if I'm not mistaken. Is that the year y'all won conference title?
Was
that
the year before. My senior year was the year we won the bowl game. So that, I mean, it ended right, but it was an underachieving season.
Right. So just talk about. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. At one point, I think the year before was when y'all was top 25 in the nation, right?
Yeah, we was like, I think we were 23rd at one point. And yeah.
That was big for Temple Athletics, because I think it's been a long time since we ever had a ranked team. And I don't, even when I was there, we had eight win, 10 win seasons, but you know, we never got that notoriety. Just talk about what it was like being at Temple and having like that national notoriety.
Honestly, like, our culture at that point was like, don't get distracted. So that kind of fell into the realm of distractions. Like, we were all like, don't get me wrong, in the dorms, in the rec room, stuff like rec halls, we was all we was talking, of course. But like, when we got into the gates, it was like, yo, we the Temple Owls, like, we playing such and such this week. You know, we didn't come in there about no numbers. We didn't care about it. We'd half the time, we didn't even know it was ranked. So it was good when we were fraternizing amongst students, but when we were amongst ourselves, that didn't really mean much to us.
Right. So I guess being Coach Rule, I know Coach Rule. I played for Coach Rule. He wasn't a head coach when I was there, but knowing him, he probably kind of that same started, like, our group kind of started. So it was always, you know, probably preaching that Temple Tough, that 10th and Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
You
know? Yep.
Yeah. It was all of that. So I know for sure he ain't really, you know, want y'all to get too ahead of yourselves. Wanted to keep it same gritty old tough nosed Temple that every time we touch the field, we just gonna go out there and punch people in the mouth and let them know that this ain't gonna be an easy game type of thing. Because that was how we played when I was at Temple.
Right.
It was like nobody showed us no respect. You know what I'm saying? Nobody thought we was nothing. Nobody thought we was going to win no games. So every time we stepped on the field, we were just trying to prove to people that we could play ball with anybody.
Right. And that was our driving force. And even when we was ranked, people didn't think we would deserve it. And people were saying this about our schedule. And don't get me wrong, we won game from beating Notre Dame. We won one play from beating Notre Dame, man.
Oh yeah, for sure. Y'all
one play from beating that team, but that would have been good. We was looking at top 10 that year because we had blew Penn State out the first game. Then we went on to win six more after that. That was our 7-0. Yeah, that was our eighth game. I think if we win that game, we're ranked top 10. Our season's different, you know. Our season's different. Right. We win that game.
So now, you know, you had a pretty good college career, pretty good experience. So now, after your senior season, just talk about what it was like getting ready for the pros and kind of making that transition from college to the pros.
I was in prove yourself mode. You hear a lot of athletes that say they was the villain or they was the bad guy, whatever that was. I felt like that was the position I was in. It wasn't really best for me, but it helped me. Because I was coming off a season, like I said, I was hurt my whole senior year. All the agents that was big agents that was hitting me up earlier stopped contacting me. You know, the projections that I was hearing, those disappeared. The ramblings about what my scouting report was, you know, so it was tough for me, honestly. Mentally, that was one of my darker spots because I'm thinking my whole time regretting my senior year. I got hurt. Damn, why I was hurt. Damn. And then, you know, now looking back, look, you couldn't do anything about it. Maybe if you had a better diet in college, you wouldn't have got hurt so bad. So, you know, but it was tough, but I put my head down. I worked. That was the hardest I worked. You know, I lost 30 pounds I wanted to get in shape to let them know I could move, you know. Mm-hmm. That was really my motivator because I had the hip surgery. I had the shoulder surgery. I knew my bench wasn't going to be good. It wasn't going to be where my position should be.
Right.
I had the 30-inch vert, and that helped me out a lot. My 40 was decent. I worked hard, man. I worked hard. I put my head down. Everything that I was doing prior to in college, drinking all night, put it aside, and I did my thing. And I'm proud of what I was able to do. I'm proud of being able to push myself like I did and to get where I needed to go. But
so you got your opportunity. You signed a UDFA with the Denver Broncos.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like going to the Mile High and getting to Denver and getting that first taste of NFL football? What was the first wow moment for you when you got that opportunity?
First wow moment, probably seeing John Elway, seeing a guy that you used to seeing on television, and you walk up to him and shake his hand. That was probably my first wow moment. I felt like that whole, I wish I could do that over again, but life don't work like that. I feel like looking back now, I feel like I wasn't really in the moment like I should have been. I was dealing with injury and that I was trying to keep low. Just not knowing what I knew about injury settlements or whatever, but that whole process for me, I felt like I was just watching myself, not really being immersed in the moments. And it showed. I had flashes of good things at camp, and that's probably why, you know, I was able to make it to the final cuts. But I mean, if this was a video game, I'd definitely redo that again. I definitely would redo it.
Yeah. So. After, you know, that opportunity came through, talk about, you know, what was the next move for you after that? Were you trying to get back to the league? You now, you know, you're currently in the CFL. Did you know anything about Canada and Canadian football before you got the opportunity to go up to Calgary?
No gas. I had been watching a lot of the Stampeders games and a lot of the Ottawa games because they was on in the bars when we were like, when we were after our games or after maybe practices or whatever, like on Fridays, we would watch y'all games, honestly. So I had no, really? A little bit about CFL. I didn't know it was 12 people in the field. I didn't know the field was big. I didn't know anything, but we used to watch it. We used to be like, okay, these dudes is all right. You know, like we felt how we felt. We Americans, you know how.
Yeah.
But I had known a little, but my process coming after I got cut from Denver, I mean, I was, you know, young, dumb. I'm thinking, all right, well, somebody gonna call me. I'm gonna chill out. And I chilled out. And when nobody called, here came October. And I mean, the depression set in because you know, like I said, I didn't love football until my second year in college. And then by that time, it was like, all right, well, let's go now. You feel me? And then after that, it's like, boom, league. Then you get league, then cut. And it's like, oh, damn, I just got into it, you know? And so I was in a dark hole. Luckily Randy Mueller gave me a chance with the AAF. I got up there, started six games, played those six games. And that really helped me get up there. Honestly, I think because just being able to, the confidence from saying, hey, I could play, what they talking about, you know? So that confidence for me helped me. And, you know, even being out of shape as I was 360 pounds playing with the AAF and with the Stallions. And, I still was able to do my thing. So. That was a big confidence boost for me. So when I went down to Florida for the mini camp invite for Calgary, I mean, my confidence was out the roof. I was like, whoever I put my hands on, I got to win. And if I did 40 one-on-ones, I might have lost four or five of them. So that was my moment. And everything I had been to from even going from Temple, that building up to that moment was like everything I needed for me to get there and dominate. And, you know, that really helped me out.
My bad. I completely, you know what? That's on my part. I completely forgot you did the AAF in it. See, that's what happened, man. See, I'm tripping. And I played in a league like that myself doing the XFL. Since you wasn't the AAF, like, just talk about, like, what that experience was like. Because me looking on the outside in, like, I like the brand of football. I thought it was good. I thought the AAF did some good things. But just being on the inside, what was it like being on the inside playing for the AAF and, you know, going through everything that it went through and then, you know, to the collapse? Like, what was it like from the player standpoint?
From the player standpoint, we all felt like competitively it was professional football. You know, they had us in hotels, but I mean, I'm gonna be honest, they did everything they could to keep us comfortable, you know, and that process was great. You know, Salt Lake was a great city. The people there invited us, they welcomed us. Maybe not everyone, but the people that we were around, they welcomed us in. And when it all collapsed, we kind of, you know, you heard about the paychecks and you heard about the season ending a couple times. So we had been hearing things as the season went on, but we just wanted the ball. Everybody on those teams was guys who had a chance and lost a chance, whether it be trouble, whether it be just getting cut, whatever the case may be. And so everybody was hungry. Everybody was hungry. We might not have been in shape, but we was all hungry. And, you know, we really came together. And that's funny. We talked about it already. We really came together as it was in college because it felt like guys was there for the same reason again. It felt like we all trying to prove ourselves, you know. And so we really came together. Those guys are tight. We was very tight. That team was tight, man. And we started to win games, and it showed, you know.
What was it like, you know, when things got shut down? Like, you know, did y'all know it was going to happen beforehand? Was it like we found out the same time as everybody else type of thing? Like, what was that like?
So 90% of our information came from Twitter. The other 10% was our coach kind of just reiterating what we had already seen on Twitter from the executive side of it. But, you know, the day of, you know, we get up the morning, we see Twitter. We're actually in meetings. That's what it was. We're in meetings. And the DB coach texts the O-line coach, like, we're letting them out, such and such. And then everyone sent the tweet around. We saw the tweet that says, AAF suspending operations for indefinitely. Yeah. So we like, damn, we don't know what to do. Teams was practicing when they got the news. So, I mean, we had a meeting that evening, 5 p.m., and they're like, you got to be out by the morning. No flights being paid for. I mean, the staff, the athletic staff, the equipment guys, they had to get their own flights. I mean, we had signed the guy because we had played 2 days before it ended, right? It ended Monday. We played Saturday. We signed the guy on Sunday. He had came in Monday. He had to get his own flight back. Like, it was a mess. It was a mess when it ended. It was a mess when it ended. We thought it was going to stay up, you know, but, you know, we don't know what we don't know.
Right. So now you touched on it a little bit before, but when you talk about that transition of, you know, going down to Florida, doing the mini camp for the CFL, and then what was that process like after, you know, you did the workout, you did your thing, you balled out? What was, you know, kind of being told to you to move forward from that point?
Well, a lot of us was kind of worried about the contractual language from the AAF saying whether or not we were eligible to do CFL activities. So that was a little thing that was looming over everybody's head. And once that got figured out, I mean, the process, like at that point, I was like, you know what? Give me a helmet and I'm making a team. That's where I was mentally. So when I went down there, it was just like, I don't care. I mean, I got respect for everybody, but I don't care who none of you guys are. I'm here to get this job. That really was my mindset.
So after the workout, Calgary offers you a contract. What was your mindset of getting ready to come up to Canada for the first time?
I was open to a new experience. I'd never been out of the country. Like, I'm from Jersey, small town. Like, we don't really travel much, you know.
Right.
Growing up in the areas we grew up in. So being able to leave the country to do something that I kind of dedicated myself to and end up falling in love with, that was a moment of fulfillment for me. Like, I felt like I did something, you know, and you grow up where we grow up. You see a lot of people that I went to school with. When I come home, they're still doing the same things, and it's unfortunate.
Right.
Like the things that's going on today. That's the reality, and the things that's going on today is kind of shedding a light on why a lot of us are in these situations in the first place.
Right.
But I was, you know, I just turned it on, man. I just turned it on.
Yeah. You get to Canada. You get to training camp. You actually, you know, unfortunately you got hurt, so you didn't really get to go through, you know what I'm saying, the full stages.
Yeah.
When that happened, did you think like, oh, damn, like, you know, here we go again type of thing? Or you know, what was your mindset when that happened?
Honestly, if it was a sliding scale, 60% of me said that my mini camp and the little bit of rookie camp kind of showed them that, look, if I'm good, I can play. But the other 40% was like, yeah, oh, I don't know how they do things. I don't know. I'm American. I'm not Canadian. I ain't no starter. I don't got no big contract. I was thinking I was going to get cut. But, you know, I think the attitude that I showed after I got hurt and how diligent I was and how still dedicated the effort I gave, I think that kind of resonated with the staff. And, you know, I think that helped me out a little bit. I think it helped me out.
Yeah. So your first year, you spent the whole year on PR. What was your thoughts of just being able to watch the Canadian game? From being an American, growing up playing American football, just being able to watch the Canadian game live for the first time and understanding it and learning it, like, what was your thoughts about Canadian football as opposed to what it was before you even knew, you know, really in details?
Well, I found a new respect for it. You know, I mean, it's not the NFL, but it's its own beast. You know what I mean? That play clock is fast. The game is faster. The field is bigger. You're not entirely, but your job is different with that extra guy on the field. Like, you got to do things a lot differently than you would in America playing mm-hmm. football. So being, and then you being who you are, you came from Temple. I was closest to you. I was able to watch you play my position. So that was fairy tale for me. That was utopian for me to be able to watch somebody that I got a relationship with and being somewhere that I feel comfortable. I like the guys around here. The staff is good. The people around us is good. I mean, the city is beautiful. That was probably the best position I could have been in not playing, you know, to be able to watch guys like you and Justin and Neela and all those dudes, like guys that I could resonate with and relate to. I mean, that was good for me. It was a great experience. So I would have loved to play that game where you was, you know, coughing and sneezing. I would have loved to jump in, but, you know, the ratio doing his thing. But it was a great experience for me. It was a great experience. I loved it. I loved it. I would have loved to play, like I said, but I loved it.
Yeah. So I mean, unfortunately, you know, things aren't looking the greatest, and which is, you know, sad, because personally, I've stated before on the show that I hope there's a 2020 season, because I want to see guys like you get opportunity to go up there and just kind of show and prove, you know, type of athlete you are. What was the thought process of, you know, once the season ended and how they were constructing the roster? You know, where did you see it? Where do you see yourself fitting in on Calgary, like in the future, if things were to go as normal?
Left tackle, show up. I know I'm talented enough to be one of the better linemen in the league. It's just all about learning the playbook in and out, building good relationships with my teammates, and just working hard. I know that I can be a cornerstone offensive lineman in the league. You know, and that's really the goal. It's not going to be like that coming in. I'm going to get beat. I'm going to fuck up. I'm going to mess up. I'm going to have mistakes or whatever, but I'm going to work hard. Yeah. I'm going to show up. And you know, my goal is to be one of the best, if not the best, offensive lineman in the league. I'm athletic enough to do it. I'm smart enough to do it. And I'm willing to do it. So yeah. I think I can get that done.
Hey, man, you know Big Bro's always praying for you, man. No, I want you to go hold it down.
I appreciate
you. Do get up and jump it, man. you know you always got a fan of your boy.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So this is what I'm going to transition to now in the football, because I always ask people this every time they come on inside from the locker room, is you ain't get a chance to, you know, get into game action yet in your pro career, you know, just in the sense outside of maybe some preseason games. So in your football career, let's go college. You played a lot in college. What college team that you always play, what D lineman that you know every time you were going to face this dude, every time he lined up across from me, it was barbecue chicken alert. Like, I was going to eat. It was going to be my best game. I was going to grade out high, all that good stuff. Like, what dude did you like playing the most and being up on the most of your college career?
I like those 3-4 teams. Those odd teams, because we were all athletic from Kyle
I don't to listen. Boz. Listen, I don't want you to give me the political correctness. I need names, bro.
I don't know names. I don't know names.
It was like that. It didn't matter.
My best. No, it didn't. It didn't. It
you don't remember playing against nobody that was good that you ate against?
No, I don't remember their names. I mean, some of my best. UCF was my best game my senior year. Tulsa was my best game my senior year. I mean, I don't know. I don't know guys' names.
So you don't know. You don't never know who you're playing against. So you don't be like, I know I'm weak.
Let me see if I can give you one. Okay, so Tulsa. I don't remember his name. No, matter of fact, no, not Tulsa. FIU. Bowl game, senior year. This dude, the defensive ends, they got him all first team all conference. They saying, oh, he about to da da da. You see some of the students, fans, they talking crazy, like da or whatever. I completely dominated. I had no idea he was a first conference, all conference player. And that's no knock on him. He's an athlete too. But I came in that game hungry. I wanted to do my thing that game. So if it is any game, it was that one. That's a lot. That's the most recent one. So that's the one I remember.
Normally, I like dude. Like I'm thinking, most football players, you know who you're playing against. You know who the good dudes is. You know who the marquee guys is. So you know what?
We didn't really do. That goes back to rule. Like we didn't do that. Like when we had scouting. We had strengths, weaknesses. We had the bios, where guys is from, stats and shit like that, but we didn't focus on that.
So like, it wasn't like what we did in Calgary. Like, you know how Pat used to make us do
scouts? No. You hear
moves in and out.
They literally used to say, like, Mondays, they said, after this, it's all us. We heard them dudes' names once or twice. We heard those guys' names once or twice in a week, and then after that, they were numbers.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So put it like this: if the CFL season was to start on time, what mm-hmm. defensive end in the CFL would you like to go against to show like he ain't that good?
Charleston Hughes definitely.
I don't know, Charleston. That's a big leap for you, bro.
He's good. He's good.
Now, Charleston caught me, so I know it's very rare. There's not too many people on the list of the names that caught me. So I always felt like if a dude could catch me, then he got some stuff to him.
He got some to who? What's the tall number 7 from Montreal?
Willie Jefferson.
Willie?
Gotta
play against Willie, man. He's a big target.
So do you think out of 10 one-on-ones, you and Willie, what you think is the range you will win him?
10-1, I'm giving myself 70%.
So 7 out of 10, you're gonna go 7 out of 10 out of. So is those three you lose? Are they gonna be sacks? Or are they gonna be like, we talking about losing bad? Or are we talking about he caught me with a little move, but he still ain't get to the quarterback?
Just him being how long he's played in the league? 15 years?
No, Willie's only been in the league, the CFL, what, maybe 5 or 6 years.
So who's I'm talking about? The big long older dude, the big long older DM.
Are you talking about Bowman?
Bowman, yeah. I want guys that got names. Like John Willie Jefferson too.
Bowman was always barbecue chicken for me. He from New York. He from Brooklyn.
See,
Hey, shout out to Bowman. Bowman's called, like, we give respect. He OG all the way to the finish. Like
you his see how
his resume see, is crazy.
It is. You see how we approach those games.
Yeah.
Like when we play somebody, Pat say their name over 150 times because
he never talked about Bowman like
not
that.
Him because he you feel me? But when he's talking when he's talking about guys, he wants us to go after him. He wants us to play hard against him. So those dudes with names in the league like that solidified, they said those are the guys I want.
You want those matchups? All right, absolutely. Listen, I can respect him though, bro. And I hope you get that opportunity to show and prove.
It's coming. It's gonna come. Whether it be 2020, whether it be 2025, it's coming. Yeah, and I'm coming.
Right. So, all right. So listen, let's jump into outside of the sports realm. You're a big hip hop head. You know, you're a rapper, MC. You know, whatever you want, whatever you know, term layman's terms you like to call it. You got bars.
So, I do.
Where did the love for hip hop come from in terms of, you know, entrenching yourself to become an MC and learning how to, you know, put your words and your thoughts together to relay it through music?
Man, so growing up, I grew up in a church, grew up in a Baptist church. My uncle played the piano. My grandmother sang. My grandfather was a pastor. All my uncles sang. My aunt sang. My cousin sang. So I was real heavy entrenched in music just through church, you know, being a young kid, getting the swing of rhythm and understanding drums and all this other stuff. I didn't even really compute at the time, but that just being around that. Like Chris Paul's son, being around him at basketball practice, when he gets mm-hmm. older, he's going to be a monster. Right. Just, you know, being around it. So I was around music. My dad sings. My dad can sing really well. So I've been around music my whole life. My cousins got vinyl tapes from when they were 16 years old, when they was rapping and stuff like that. So, I mean, I was all around music. I had a problem really expressing myself growing up, and I had a bad temper, and I relied on music as a form of kind of sedative in a way. So, in different aspects of my life, music's been important to me.
I mean, I've listened to some of your stuff. You're nice, bro. I mean, you put it in layman terms, you're nice. You got bars. What is a lot of your inspiration come from for some of the stuff that you like to spit about?
A lot of it, well, more recently now, has just been putting the right message out. Whether it be the gory, exclusive truth, or whether it be something that's just, you know, locker room stuff or lunchroom raps or whatever. But right now, it's more important, I feel like, for me to put out messages that can contribute to the cause we're trying to achieve. And so that's really where my headspace is. And you know, I just, the young kids that was in the situation I was younger and didn't have what I'm able to provide now, from an experience and wisdom standpoint, you know, I just want to give them something that they can say, okay, well, this guy came from Plainfield. He barely even played football. And then he goes to the league. What did he do? I want to be able to communicate it, and whether it be music, because some people can interpret it a little bit better than when you stand in front of them and you point out points. And some people, it resonates better. So,
right,
you know, just doing whatever I can, honestly.
Let's just talk about kind of, you know, what the social climate is. I've been asking everybody that's coming on the show, you know, their feelings and thoughts about it. And like mm-hmm. I said, you've been, if you watch, you know, your social media, you've been very vocal on a point to where you're stating, you know, some of your opinions. You've been, you know, voicing them through your music. And where's your thought process right now about, you know, the state of the country, where it's at, and what needs to be achieved in order to kind of help, you know, people like us, you know, get better opportunities going forward?
It's kind of tough from the idea that all of this stuff that we're outraged about now, we've been persevering through our entire lives. And those before us that have already passed have been doing the same. So it's upsetting that now we're outraged. It took another life to get us all outraged. But at the same time, it's like, a lot of us didn't even know some of the laws that just keep us down and some of these other things. And so now the social climate today is just like, it's made me a better person. The quarantine, along with the social issues that's going on, has just made me a better person. It's kind of shifted my focus in terms of like, even just how I spend my time, my story. Like if you look at my social media accounts from 3 months ago, no activity on Twitter, rare activity on my story and posting things, but now I feel like I'm pretty decently articulate, you know, and I feel like I got a tool or a message I can use in my vehicle. Like I got a bunch of vehicles, whether it be music, whether it just be me speaking, whether it be spoken word, whether it be even through football. So I'm using all of these vehicles to get messages out.
What exactly is the message that you want to drive home to the people?
You got to give some form of education, right? Because if you don't know your situation, you have no chance of getting out of it. So a lot of the things I'm posting now is like different laws, different things that have went on in the past, things about the stat. I mean, anything I can get my hands on that I feel like is credible information, is not inflammatory or offensive, I'm spreading it. And it's hard to draw that line sometimes because you never know who you're offending. But for the most part, my objective is to educate, give some form of like self-inspiration where it's like you don't have to pretend to be this. You don't have to act like that. All you got to do is focus, find something you want to do, and just go and do it. And call to actions always. I never want to leave people with cliffhangers. Sometimes I do. I ain't perfect, but most of the time I want to say something and give you something to do. So it's not just an empty message, you know.
some people who may not follow you on social media may not get a chance to hear it. So why don't you just, you know, maybe if you want to, you know, spit some bars or something to kind of just give people an idea of information that you're giving out that you want them to listen to.
Okay, let me see. I gotta think of something. I say, systematic oppression, I'm over it. I'm getting sick and tired of condolences, feel emotionless while the law here, and it feel like cops over it, maybe knowing it. No lie, depression turning to hopelessness. How you supposed to focus when gunpowder smoke flow, Nova wind, school system not designed to win, so you pull Mac-10s on Kens with the fuzz. You either grow up around bloods or cuz, because the hate, we went from being slaves to giving slugs to our bros. Telling them toy stories like it make us thugs, thinking, would he do anything for a buzz? Rain clouds over them in the city, so we get it out the mud. Protect and serve, serving sentences before we ever see a judge. I pull up in a rare car. It be getting grisly, so I bear arms. They say Jesus' peace is protective, so we wear charms. I'm sick of them siren lights. See, I'm just trying to thrive in life. This could go one of two ways, procedure or I die tonight. Jersey.
That's what I'm talking about, baby. Yeah. Yo, Lee, my boy, I appreciate you, you know, joining me, man. Love the talks, bro. I love the messages that you're spitting. Keep doing your thing, man. Anytime you want to, you know what I'm saying, you need a platform or something, you know you can always holler at big bro. You know I always got you. Again, this is Leon Johnson, former Denver Bronco, currently Calgary Stampede offensive lineman. Lee, appreciate you coming on, my brother, man. Always love do your thing, man. Know you always got support my way.
I appreciate you. I thank you for extending the opportunity for me to just have a platform to speak. You know, I take pride in the words that come out of my mouth, and I ain't perfect, but my goal is to, you know, help the world. You know, leave the world better than I found it. So you giving me the opportunity to do that, I appreciate you.
Your social media, give you a shout out, let people know where to follow you so they can get some more content.
Okay, so on Twitter, you can follow me at HTLJ53. On Instagram, you can follow me at ToreJJR. That's ToreJJR on Instagram.
Lee, again, appreciate you coming on, my brother. I love you, man.
Yes, sir. Love you too, cuz. Appreciate you.
Take care of yourself, man. And yeah, best of luck to you. If 2020 gets jumping, the season gets jumping, best of luck to you, my boy.
Appreciate you. But I got a question for you. So if 2020 jump off, where is Sir Bone Crusher gonna be in Florida?
Yo, to be real with you, I don't even know, man. I thought after the XFL joint, after that got underway, the plan was, you know, do the XFL and then
go to the league, yeah.
Yeah, come back to the CFL, maybe get a shot or whatever. So, I mean, COVID is pretty much putting everything in a hassle. But right now, I don't know. I guess my resume too heavy. My price tag was too heavy that everybody was looking for. I guess cheaper talent. They didn't want to pay the OG. So,
what's your resume, real quick though? 2-time Western All Star, most outstanding lineman, 2016.
Three time West Division All Star, CFL All Star, 2016 most outstanding lineman, 2018 Grey Cup champ.
Don't want that? Who don't want that on their team? Who doesn't want that in the locker room?
You know what you're gonna learn in sports, especially the business side of it, is that, you know, jobs being extended and contracts being signed, it don't always got to do with talent, bro. It's always everything else.
Yeah.
And right. I think you see how I was in the locker room, the type of player I was. Like, I don't mince my words, man. I tell everybody how I feel about them. I tell whether it's you a coach, whether you a player, you know what I'm saying? I keep it real because I feel like that's the environment that I want to be in. I want people to be truthful with me. I want people to be real with me, and that's always how I carry myself. But I'm starting to realize sometimes people don't know how to handle real, man. People don't know how to handle guys who are intelligent, who can think for themselves and speak for themselves. And it's not just a do what I say and say what I tell you to say type of person. And I just never been one of those guys, so I feel like that's kind of maybe been a knock on me in a sense of, I know the reason why I'm not in Calgary is just because they didn't want to pay for me. That's just simple. You know, you're paying your quarterback a lot of money, and you know, with the fact that there's always young American linemen coming out every year, you know, they always just felt like they don't have to spend money in that position type of thing. So, it ain't got nothing to do with talent. It's just more the business side of the game, and I understand it. So, I mean, I ain't mad.
Right, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I obviously get it now way more than I got it, because I was looking around and some of the when I got to Denver, I was, you know, seeing some guys and them, you know, just like, okay. Oh, okay. I see. Oh, okay. Yeah. A lot of it's political.
It's 90% political. 10% got to do with playing football. So, that's just the nature of the beast. I mean, somebody gonna need an OG. You know what I mean? Young guys.
Right.
Yeah, they youthful, but you know what I'm saying? You can't, what you learn in the real world is you can't substitute youth for experience.
Cannot supplement experience. I was just about to say that. You cannot supplement experience.
You can't supplement experience for youth. So, I mean, I feel like if football is played, somebody gonna holler at your boy, man.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm gonna have to swallow my pride in the sense of, you know, the monetary senses, but you know what I'm saying? That's how we grew up, man. If it ain't talking dollars, it don't make sense at all. So.
Talk to me.
Yeah. That's just how we grew up, but yo, appreciate you, little bro, man. I'm gonna holler at you, man. Stay in touch. You know, if you ever need anything, man, just holler at you, boy. You know, I got you always.
Will do, man. I appreciate you.
Alrighty, man. Enjoy the rest of your week. I'm gonna holler at you. Right?
You too. Peace and health to the family.
Yes, sir.
That was Leon Johnson, offensive lineman of the Calgary Stampeders. I want to shout out my boy Leon for coming on here and joining me on the show. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Hope you guys got a chance to learn more about Leon and his art. The boy is dope, man. The bars that you got to hear on this episode are pretty fire, and it's just a snippet of what he could do. So go and check out his social media. Give Leon a follow and listen to the message that he's trying to send, man. It's a powerful message. It's something that needs to be heard, and I think it'll help, you know, people kind of get some of that knowledge that, you know, others are out there seeking right now. So, that's it for me on this episode of Insights from the Locker Room. Hope you guys enjoyed. Again, follow us on Twitter at Insights from the LR. We are also on Instagram, Insights from the LR. And follow me on my personal pages if you guys got any feedback from the shows, anything that you want me to add, anything that you like, you enjoyed. I'm always a man of the people. I love to hear from you, whether it's positive or negative. So, in the words of my man, Russell Westbrook.
I'm out.